is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, over the next 2 hours, we have a lot to talk about in regards to election fraud. We'll start in the first hour with Tim Alders, the American Mighty Strike Force, and the ground forces that are capturing affidavits and real-world information as to what happened in this election 2020. And the information of what's coming forth is overwhelming, my friends. This is a perilous moment for our nation, for sure. Also, Dr. Peter McCullough is here on the COVID vaccines and the latest COVID missteps and what's happening there. He was just speaking with Senator Ron Johnson up in the Senate here and there, along with Dr. Harvey Risk. Lots to talk about here. We have Sidney Powell here. She's the attorney and former federal prosecutor. She became a conservative hero in her counsel to General Michael Flynn. And now she's at the center of the storm, the MAGA storm for conservatives, that is, in election 2020. She's author of the bestseller, Licensed to Lie. How appropriate is that here? So I want to start first with Flynn, if I might, Sidney. And the president tweeted Wednesday, November 25th, it is my great honor to announce that General Michael T. Flynn has been granted a full pardon. Congratulations to General Flynn and his wonderful family. I know you will now have a truly fantastic Thanksgiving. So the president tweeted that out. It was, to many people, bittersweet because of Judge Emmett Sullivan and what had been should have been an easy case. K.T. McFarland, who served as deputy national advisor under Michael Flynn, says it's important to understand that the persecution of Flynn, me and others, was never about any of us. It was always about getting to Trump and crippling his presidency. Thankfully, the pardon will shield Flynn from further persecution by Trump-hating Democrats who may have wanted another go at him again in a Joe Biden administration. Tell me about this. What do you think about this this pardon?
Well, I agree that it was bittersweet. My goal from the beginning was to make the judicial system work for everyone. And it's important it work to exonerate an innocent man because not everybody can go and get a pardon. They're probably 5 to 10% of our current prison population is actually innocent of what they're in prison for. That is an outrage. We've had political prosecutions like Flynn for more than a decade, probably up to 20 years now, that simply should never have happened. But at this point, you know, the Department of Justice had moved to dismiss it. The department had acknowledged there was no crime. It's been months since Flynn, when we moved to withdraw his plea in January. Right. And Judge Sullivan never ruled on that. So it was Judge Sullivan's obvious intention to drag this out and torture Flynn with the whole prosecution as long as he possibly could. Thank goodness the American people stepped up and funded our defense fund for General Flynn to help keep the litigation going so we could prove that he was innocent, which we did. And we just, you know, enough was enough. We hit what I call refrigerator rule number 6, enough is enough. And Judge Sullivan had done nothing despite the circuit's order to resolve it with dispatch. And the circuit should never have sent it back to him. So we exposed corruption at the judicial level of the D.C. Circuit and Judge Sullivan's court as well. So in essence, we accomplished all of our mission except the judicial order of exoneration that we would have gotten from the Supreme Court if necessary. But it just was taking too much of a chunk out of his life with no further need or benefit to doing that. So
no
we
doubt,
are thankful
no doubt
for the pardon.
It. Yeah, and by the way, one last thought. This is very interesting. K.T. McFarland goes on to say, the irony is that Flynn should not have needed pardon at all, which is what you're saying right there, because he never should have been investigated or charged with any crime. Flynn didn't break any laws, but he was forced to plead guilty to a crime he didn't commit in order to save his son from being unjustly prosecuted and destroyed by an investigation conducted by Special Counsel Robert Mueller. It kind of says it all, doesn't it?
It does. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, exactly.
It was one of the most egregious injustices in the history of our country. The only thing that exceeds that is what we're watching right now with fraud so blatant across the entire country. It's almost unbelievable. But that's what it is. And it's an international fraud, a criminal fraud of the worst order and magnitude in the history of the world.
Yeah, and I'm getting the sense of that every moment that goes by now. And let's talk about that now. This you've got two major pieces you're involved in here, Georgia and Michigan, I believe. And the Georgia was, again, you references that is a biblical moment, which really caught everybody's attention, to tell you the gravity of what had happened. As I understand now, you made about 30 allegations in that. And there are a couple of interesting ones here. The software, first of all, used by the Dominion machines, and this is in your report here, charges, was assessed by agents of malicious actors such as China and Iran in order to monitor and manipulate elections, including the 2020 election. The allegation is based on a redacted declaration of a former electronic intelligence analyst under the 305th military intelligence. So you really get into it here, and you talk about the servers and what have you. Let's get to the essence of what's happening in Georgia. And I mean, it's a massive cases of fraud here, is it not?
Oh, it is. And it infected every state in the country. They ran an algorithm in the voting machines that took votes from Trump and flipped them over to Biden. That's one means of doing it. Some places they put massive number of votes, I'm talking hundreds of thousands, in the trash can that were for Trump. They just took them and trashed them, like you would drag and drop a file on your computer to the trash bin and deleted them. It's that simple, the way these machines were designed, and they were deliberately designed to make sure Hugo Chavez, the brutal dictator of Venezuela, never lost another election. And then it was exported around the world. I would love to know where Chavez got the original technology to do this, because I think our own CIA had a very strong hand in it, and likely in the results of this election too. They have been using it for a number of years. This is not the first time. This time it was just so blatant, so egregious. Even I, who don't do math and algorithms and all that stuff, could see it happening. And multiple engineers, computer tech guys all over the country have been writing to say they saw it too. They cannot hide it this time. It was so blatant. It was in our faces. They picked the two worst candidates they could possibly pick to run for president and vice president on the Democratic ticket. They shoved it up our nose with this computer fraud.
Yeah, and it is out in daylight, as you say right now. We're seeing more and more of it, in fact, here. Now, your demands in the Georgia one, let me read these to our listeners here. The lawsuit asks the court to order Georgia to do the following: decertify the election results, not transmit the currently certified election results to the Electoral College. Of course, December 14th is coming quick now. Transmit instead certified election results that state that Trump is the winner of the election. Impound all the voting machines and software in Georgia for expert inspection by the plaintiffs. Not count votes received or tabulated by machines that weren't certified. And produce 36 hours of security camera footage of all rooms used in the voting process. So what do you think about this? What's the sense of these demands, and what's your feelings about the Georgia case?
Well, the sense is that the Georgia case is especially egregious. It's one of the most egregious. As soon as we saw the machine stop election night, right, that was the signal for the person from Venezuela who knows and saw how this worked all along, that the fraud was happening in a huge way. They weren't just shaving points by then. Trump's support was so great, it broke the algorithm. And so many hundreds of thousands of votes were pouring in for him in those states that just suddenly stopped all sort of simultaneously, that they had to go in and backfill with fake votes. That's how the mail fraud scheme helped them with those ballots. But we have testimony of people taking the same stack of ballots and running through the machines multiple times to generate additional votes. We know that the machine can create votes. It can delete votes. The software is set up to do anything anybody wants to do with it, whether it's override looking at signatures or override votes for a particular candidate. It's absolutely horrific. And their own manual that they produced on the machines explains how it works. So many of these states that bought the Dominion machines knew exactly how it worked, and there needs to be criminal investigations of the election officials and elected officials who authorized buying the Dominion machines, knowing exactly how they could be exploited to ensure that certain people won the election. And I think that's probably true in Georgia and definitely Arizona. And apparently governor of Pennsylvania shoved it down the legislature's throat. The legislature said the other day that they were opposed to Dominion machines, but the governor mandated it. That's a very interesting development, particularly in light of the history of the machines that Democrats were screaming about years ago, and nobody has paid any attention to. One of the things that concerns me the most is the failure of our government, our Department of Justice, our Department of Homeland Security, any of our government agencies that are supposed to protect our national security, because that's what this is an issue of, to do anything to stop this abject fraud. We've got evidence also that, for example, it happened in 2016. This is how Hillary Clinton helped steal the primary from Bernie Sanders. I talked to one person who said Bernie Sanders was informed of all of this after the election, but apparently instead of outing it, he sold out.
Yeah, I heard that as well there. By the way, that Pennsylvania you mentioned right there, the Pennsylvania Commonwealth Judge Patricia McCullough, she says that Republicans will likely win that election lawsuit in Pennsylvania. You see that?
Yes, I did see that. I haven't had time to read the decision yet, but I did see that. And she's right. I think we won Pennsylvania by probably about 500,000 votes. And the real important thing that people need to understand is this affects down ballot candidates, too. John James should never have conceded the Michigan race. Mm-hmm. But given the level of fraud, I would hope that that would be set aside also, and he could get the seat that he actually won. Yeah. It happened to congressmen. It happened to some state officials. Sure. Yeah. Anytime you saw them go to bed with a lead and then the machine shut down and wake up the next morning and they lost, it is likely from the ultra massive fraud. But then the shaving went on, we think, everywhere except possibly one state. So there's no telling how many people lost because of essentially a 2.7% swing or flip of the votes per the algorithm.
Sydney, I sort of get the feeling this is the calm before the storm, and I really mean this. We're at a perilous moment, and I just have a gut-wrenching feel about everything with all the folks I've talked to throughout the Trump campaign and so many others here. Let me ask you this, and here President Trump called out Biden, and this was very interesting. He said, kind of a red line, if you will, Joe Biden can only enter the White House as president if he can prove that his ridiculous 80 million votes, which is unbelievable, were not fraudulently or illegally obtained. When you see what happened in Detroit, Atlanta, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, a massive voter fraud, he's got a big unsolvable problem. Now, the president put that out there for folks to chew on a little bit here. And, you know, you've got to ask yourself now, the evidence of voter fraud is mounting to the likes of we've never seen. Is this enough to flip these states, in your opinion, as this now has got to get up to the Supreme Court in this short window of time? This seems like a Herculean event. Is it doable?
Oh, yes, it's doable. It must be done or the rule of law is dead and there's no point in even having elections. If our votes are not sacred, like we've always been told they were, and we know now they absolutely are not, there's no, the United States of America is gone from what it was founded to be. We cannot and must not let that happen. I expect every patriot to notify their legislators, their elected officials, that this vote better be secured in the future, that Dominion machines and the entire voting apparatus must be thrown out because the software everywhere includes the DNA code of the fraudulent system, not just Dominion machines, but others. And we've got to get a secure voting system that the people can trust without any doubt of being manipulated. Well, it just can't happen or we're gone.
Sydney, wouldn't that be started by getting it off the internet?
Yeah, well, yeah, that would be one start. But yeah, there's almost no way to do that unless we go back to old fashioned hand paper ballots, which is what we're probably going to need to do.
I get the feeling that that is going to be have to be the answer, because anytime you're in cyberland, you're dealing with all kinds of evil people that are going to do evil things. You know that. And there's about no way to
exactly.
fix that.
And these people, Dominion left their back door, as they call it in the computer world, open deliberately and unencrypted for all kinds of nefarious actors to be influencing our election that night, aside from the fact of running the algorithm probably wherever they were paid to run it. I don't know exactly how that works. That's something the Department of Justice should be investigating. Mm-hmm. I certainly hope they are, because like I said, this is the most egregious, massive fraud in the history of the world, and it's got to be fully exposed, shut down, and a lot of people need to be going to prison for all these manner and means of voter fraud.
This is about as big as it gets right here, Sidney Powell. I mean, it gets no bigger than this. Give me a quick update on Michigan. How is that going?
Michigan, I think, is going well. We've got our suit filed there. We're getting ready to file an amended complaint in it. Mm-hmm. And we're getting ready to file in some other states, too. We're moving as fast as we possibly can, but we're still consuming evidence through multiple fire hoses.
Yeah, yeah. Did you have any sense or inclination before this election that this level of fraud would take place? You have any sense about that before the November 3rd?
Yes, I have been concerned about the voting system for a while because I saw strange things happening several years ago. And now we know they've at least used it since 2016. I think it goes back to earlier in the 2000s.
Sidney, you're all in on this. I can hear it in your voice. You can hear your passion. I knew it immediately as soon as we talked today. I mean, you're all in, and we've got to encourage other Americans to get all in. Let me give folks also the website for the Legal Defense Fund. I mean, this has taken a lot of money for you to do this, correct?
Yes, we're having to put together a massive, massive team.
Yeah. So defendingtherepublic.org, is that the place people go?
Yes, that's the place. And I would also encourage any insider of Dominion or Smartmatic, the companies that have done this fraud, who have evidence of it, to come forward and be the first ones to admit what was going on, because there will be people going to prison for this. It's hideous.
Yeah, see, you can't keep this kind of thing hidden. And I mean, it's got to come out in the light of day. Do I understand also your website's being blocked by social media and all of that? Is that correct, the censorship?
Oh, yes. Yes, we've had all kinds of attacks on the website, and Twitter blocked it for about 24 hours, which is absolutely ridiculous. And it's going to be even more important. We're also getting ready to launch a new website, and I will give more information about that as soon as it comes up.
Right. Defendingtherepublic.org, though, is where people can go to get more information and the latest from you, right?
Yes, get more information there and make donations to our Legal Defense Fund.
Right. And your final word, your final piece of advice to everybody listening is what?
President Trump won this election, and there are no circumstances under which he could lawfully be removed from the White House. None whatsoever.
Sidney Powell, you are certainly a people, any standards, an American hero, and certainly a conservative hero. And I don't mean to say that for you to respond in any way, but we are so proud of you and the work that you're doing. And I think all Americans and all conservatives, all patriots certainly stand tall with you in this fight. And thank you, Sidney, for everything you're doing.
Thank you. And we thank everyone for their prayers, especially. We feel it. We are strengthened and uplifted by them. And we are going to win this for the country and, frankly, for the world.
Amen. God love you. God bless you, Sidney. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, as you listen to Sidney Powell, I mean, she is in the heat of the battle just as we speak. She was talking to me from the courtrooms, and you could hear it in her voice, my fellow Americans, what the stakes are. And there's no doubt in my mind what the odds are, what we're up against here is pretty incredible here. But really appreciate her taking the time to talk to us and to bring the truth forward, of course, is most important. Now, a lot more on this. A little bit later in the program, Tim Alders, the American Mighty Strike Force, will be here. And this is, well, he's on the ground. He has a lot of information about the fraud and the things that Sidney just talked about. He is one of the key people running the ground force, has been gathering the evidence across our country. It's a big deal. And he's outraged. I mean, he explained to me the other day, and just yesterday sent me a message, said, "I'll never look at elections the same way again in this country, Malcolm." Wow, I said. Well, and Tim Alders will be on the line here today with us. Also, Dr. Peter McCullough is here talking about the COVID vaccines and all these missteps that have taken place. It's a pretty serious discussion and one you need to hear. And there's some programming notes I'm going to give you as well. There was a Senate hearing just a week ago here with Senator Ron Johnson, with Dr. Peter McCullough and Dr. Harvey Risk. That is a must hear the interview, and a lot more to tell you about that a little bit in the program. Just stay forward with that. And we'll continue on with Viewpoint, my friends. Stay right there. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
My fellow Americans, you've watched for decades as radical Marxists have systematically taken over some of our nation's most cherished institutions. Well, AmericaOutloud.com is fighting back with one of the fastest growing conservative media networks in the world, featuring some of the nation's most influential experts and commentators. Join us. We're in this together, and we consider you part of our family in our crusade to share the news, commentary, and agenda that can lead America back again. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Well, the other big thing that's happening, you're seeing, is the rise of these cases, but also hospitalizations, and then you see the vaccines coming. There's a lot to talk about with COVID, and the real question of quandary becomes, how are we handling it? What are we doing as an overall job? What kind of a grade do we give ourselves? And, you know, we've been talking about this, but a lot of misinformation out there. I hope we can clear some of that up right now with you, my fellow Americans, and we'll do that with Dr. Peter McCullough. He's an academic internist and cardiologist from Dallas, Texas. He's been a leader in the pandemic response to the COVID-19 disaster, published the first guidance on the medical treatment of ambulatory patients. He was just speaking here this past week with Senator Ron Johnson at the Senate hearing on COVID and the treatment plans, which has been a real discussion point to get the early home treatment. We'll talk about that a little bit today as well. So let's start here, Dr. McCullough, and here's the report I see just yesterday here on Saturday. I seen this report. U.S. hospitalizations topped 90,000 for the first time, and that was reported by CBS and other news networks. More Americans than ever are in the hospital with the coronavirus. On Thanksgiving Day, hospitalizations hit a record high of more than 90,000, according to the COVID Tracking Project. And about 50 Americans are now dying every hour. More than 13 million Americans have now been infected with the virus, and it shows no signs of slowing down. Hospitals already at the brink are bracing for a new surge after 6.5 million people flew this holiday week. That is a very, very bleak story there, Dr. McCullough. And so I ask you this, with hospitalizations on the rise, vaccines ready to flood the market, and I want to really put into this conversation also the early home treatment. Is that the answer for people keeping them safe? And what does that entail? We get right to the crux of the story. How can people keep themselves safe?
Well, Malcolm, thanks for having me on the program. And let me state that my opinions expressed here today are my own and not necessarily those of my institution. COVID-19 hospitalizations are of the singular greatest concern, I think, for Americans right now who are sick with the virus. And what they need to know is that the hospitalization can be avoided. It's not an eventuality. Hospitalizations are clearly related to increased age over age 50. Having multiple medical problems, including obesity, diabetes, heart disease, kidney disease, current or past cancer, as well as presentation of severe symptoms. So if a patient presents within the first day or so with severe symptoms, including high fever and difficulty breathing at any age, that predicts a risk of hospitalization. Now, when hospitalization occurs, what patients need to know is that they are placed in isolation, that they are not allowed to see others. They have relatively infrequent contact by anybody else in the hospital. And about 75% of them never require the mechanical ventilator, but require some degree of additional oxygen above room air oxygen. About 25% end up on the mechanical ventilator. The average hospital stay is about 2 to 4 weeks. And I can tell you, having so many patients hospitalized, I've never had a single one report that it's a pleasant experience. And when patients go to the emergency room to be hospitalized, they break their quarantine at home. So they infect whoever drives them to the hospital, the paramedics, the hospital waiting rooms and hallways. So hospitalization is really in many ways a contributor to this accelerating COVID-19 crisis that we have. And what I want the listeners to know is that all the data suggests it is largely avoidable.
Okay, let's turn our attention to the vaccine. So right now, we all know there are a series of major companies that have been working on this in the Operation Warp Speed, and they are moving pretty quick now to get this stuff to market. There's a lot of conversation about this. Some of it is that they're passing the animal trials and get to the human testing quicker, but, and of course, a lot of regulations were broken down and to get the streamline opened up to get this to the public. Let's take a moment now, Dr. McCullough. And there are two sides to this story. I mean, you're either pro-vaccine or you're anti-vaccine. And that's not really what I want to ask here, but it's more so, I want to talk about the good and the bad. Just what should we expect? What are the positives about a vaccine out there? And what are the negatives, please?
Well, let me just state that currently we have 13 million proven cases of COVID-19, vast majority in adults, and the relationship between those who had COVID-19 but never got a test or proved it is about 10 to 1. So about 130 million out of the 240 million adults in the United States have actually had COVID-19. So a vaccine that would be applied now would probably be applied to a minority of adults, and it's undetermined if it would be applied to children. In the clinical studies, the vaccine was given, I believe, down to age 12. In the clinical studies, but the majority were healthy adults who had no prior history of COVID-19, and it was a clean population. We know in the vaccine trials, despite being very large, less than 1% in the vaccine arm and less than 1% in placebo contracted COVID-19, which is almost amazing that all the trials could recruit such low-risk patients.
Let's say you had COVID before. I mean, do you want the vaccine if you've healed from that? Or what if you have, if you're asymptomatic and you have, do you want the vaccine there? What are your thoughts there?
Well, let me say, you mentioned that originally the FDA had guidance on the vaccine that they wanted 2 years of observational safety data. Remember, some vaccines are one-time administration. Sometimes it's one time with a booster at a month, but they wanted 2 years of observation. That was shortened now to 2 months of observation, which is a very short period of time to collect safety events. And it's also a very short time to understand if the vaccine is durable or not. So as it stands right now, the inclusion criterion would be no prior history of COVID-19 or suspected COVID-19 and otherwise healthy without any immune problems to receive the vaccine. And I published a series of opinion editorials in The Hill, which is a Washington insider newsletter. And in the most recent issue, I predicted that the vaccine would be safe for those who previously haven't had COVID-19. However, I'm suspicious that it won't be durable, meaning that it won't be the same thing as a natural infection. The natural infection, which is there for 2 weeks and causes enough symptoms to really create illness, that activates all kinds of cellular and immune processes that all the data suggest that the natural infection will cause durable immunity. There's no reason why it can't. The only cases of a reinfection that's been reported have been in patients with severe immunodeficiency or in a rare case where the virus has mutated considerably. So how we would apply this to individuals in the population would be, sure, the vaccine would be safe and likely to be effective in COVID-19 naive individuals. The concern is in patients who have had clinical COVID-19 or have had it and just haven't had proven that the vaccine would be, it would be an additional administration of a stimulant to the immune system in which the body already has had a response to COVID-19. And because it's a severe infection, it could activate abnormal immune processes called cytokine storm that causes tissue damage or internal blood clotting cause thrombosis. And because none of the vaccine trials have given us any information about vaccinating on top of somebody who's either had a cult or proven COVID-19, I think that remains to be the greatest concern.
I'm hearing reports that you'd have to have, what is it, like 70% or something to have herd immunity. I read some reports that said a good amount of people would have to take that vaccine to accomplish anything. Can you enlighten us there?
Well, we could be currently at 40% of all individuals in the country, and maybe slightly more than 50% of adults who, in fact, have had COVID-19. So herd immunity is very likely going to be phasing in here. I had predicted that we're in the last big phase of COVID-19 right now. So as the vaccine rolls out, it's going to be, in a sense, kind of in cleanup position. It won't be the savior for us against COVID-19. We've basically survived through the pandemic with incredible casualties, over 260,000 deaths in our country and millions of hospitalizations that in many cases were avoidable. But what we know is that there is a great prematurity to the vaccine in the sense of there's been a very short duration of study, very low rates of infection in the studied individuals. And it's been in an unprecedented way advertised before it's even commercialized or approved. So we know that the large pharmacy chains in the United States on their voice recorders are advertising the vaccine. We've never had in the pharmaceutical advertising community or rules even advertising for a product that doesn't yet exist. Qantas Airlines is one, and probably more will come forward, are basically stating that it'll be mandatory for individuals to have the vaccine to travel. So one of the great concerns here with all the questions regarding the vaccine is how much will it actually be effectively forced on the population and for them to live and conduct their lives and conduct business, have to undergo vaccination.
I mean, that just tells you right there, there's been a lot of conversation about this force mandatory vaccination thing. But like you say, when you have corporations pulling their strength like that, and that could be harm and dangerous and deadly to somebody, whereas they're saying, well, you got to have a vaccination certificate of some sort to be able to fly in our airline or to do something with it. I mean, that's just dangerous and reckless. But you know, Dr. McCullough, this whole thing, what you just opened the eyes for as well, is this is a media-induced run campaign and has been from the beginning. And here we are with the vaccine now with, like you say, the bad information out there. You know what? I get a funny, odd feeling right now that we've not done a great job with managing this thing for a lot of reasons, the whole COVID thing. And it sounds to me like with the vaccine, we're not going to really do a great job there either. That's my impression. And I don't like to say that, quite frankly. We don't seem to be learning from our lessons, and we're falling into the same traps.
The media program in the mass media has been on contagion control, wear a mask and wash your hands. All the expert commentary goes on the news saying every time we see a new statistic on COVID-19, it always goes back to wearing masks and trying to reduce the spread. Never a comment on early treatment at home. There is some mention of late hospitalization treatments, but there's great disagreement now on every single attempt to treat patients in the hospital. The NIH, FDA, and other world authorities disagree. Remdesivir, convalescent plasma, on and on and on. And the therapies that have been brought forward, novel antibody therapies, have not been tractable, scalable. There's no commercialization of them. They're having zero public health impact. And then, as you've mentioned, there's been this focus on the vaccine with almost a passive assent to everybody that the vaccine is really the solution. The other thing that you have not seen is any collaboration between the United States and outside in the rest of the world. The media gives no window to what the rest of the world is doing with respect to COVID-19. And by the way, other countries, densely populated, underdeveloped countries, have done far better with COVID-19 because they've embraced early home treatment. So what have doctors in the United States and outside the United States done? They figured out that sequenced multi-drug treatment, along with various nutraceuticals, can markedly reduce the risks of hospitalization and death. I mean, cut them down at least 50%, potentially 80 to 90%. These home treatments are enormously effective, and they involve nutraceuticals such as zinc, vitamin D, quercetin, vitamin C, and they involve prescription generic medications in a sequenced fashion. They can include hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, doxycycline, azithromycin. All those drugs work inside the cell to prevent viral replication and reduce viral replication. And then the use, once lung symptoms set in, the use of steroids, prednisone is a common one, very effective. And then to prevent this dreaded complication of blood clotting, the use of higher doses of aspirin, 325 milligrams a day in virtually every patient, and then oral blood thinners or injectable blood thinners by prescription. So these would apply to patients over age 50 or individuals who have one or more underlying medical problems that I've mentioned, or those who present with severe symptoms. This approach, which is now taking off in the United States, is really being done via telemedicine through 1-800 numbers and largely bypassing the conventional medical delivery system.
Well, you know, this is the most vital information you could possibly get out there, my fellow Americans. You're listening to Dr. Peter McCullough here. And he is not only prominent in his field, but the advice, the passion, you can hear the expertise. A couple of important things to tell you here that I need you to pay attention to. This is, again, probably the most important conversation and segment we've just had, but it goes further than this. And there are some tools and some thoughts I can give you. Starting with this, on Monday, on The Voice of a Nation, at 6 and 10 p.m. Eastern Time, anywhere in the country, you can hear us on iHeartRadio. You want to listen to America Out Loud Talk Radio. You want to tell your friends and family and others to listen to this talk. We have an outstanding talk, which will be with Dr. Peter McCullough, who you've just heard, and Dr. Harvey Risk. And this is going to get much more in depth with all of this because they'll be on for the full hour with me. And it's extensive, the information here that we need to get out to the public. Now, having said that, right on the home front page of AmericaOutLoud.com is a post that is from our colleague and expert here on the network, who also is working with Dr. McCullough and Senator Ron Johnson as well, and a whole group of impressive people that are on the fight here. And it's entitled COVID-19 Treatment. Tell your story to the U.S. Senate. You want to go hit that link. There are some really great, important links in there. And I'm telling you, this is worth your time and price of admission here, without a doubt. In that post there, you'll see the new patient guide to early COVID treatment at home. This is something they've worked very hard on. It is free. It is available. It is accessible. It will give you a lot of information you need to take control of your life, okay? There's also a link where you can tell your story to the United States Senate in there, right there. But also, I want to encourage you to go listen to the Senate hearing that Dr. McCullough and Dr. Risk was involved in with Senator Ron Johnson. It is most impressive and probably the best, 30, 40 minutes of your time. It's condensed here, this particular recording, but it's solid. And it's on Senator Ron Johnson's actual YouTube feed. But the links for all that are right in that post, the U.S. Senate hearing on early COVID-19 treatments. So that's a must for you to do that. The Monday program with Dr. Risk again and Dr. McCullough here is vital as well for you to get more in-depth information. Again, as I said at the top of this, I don't want you to think that I don't think that this virus isn't real. Make no mistake, it's real. And I know sometimes you've heard me talk about, because I'm sort of anti-mask and anti-that, but listen, I am very pro-safe. I'm very pro your life, that it is of most importance that you get the safety and security you need. So COVID is real. It's just how we've handled it has been my dispute. And back to a lot of the great information you just heard from Dr. McCullough, even with the early home treatment and things like that, Dr. Elizabeth Lee Vliet has been on in the front of, and Dr. Risk and so many others. This is a vital tools that we have for you out there. So don't stop here. Get this out to people who need to know it, please. It's vital. It's a matter of life and death. And so there's no other way to put that, please. So I beg of you to do that, okay? And a big thank you to Dr. Peter McCullough, who has been tremendous here. We're indebted to his expertise, knowledge, and his willingness to get out in the frontier of all of this. So up next, friends, we're going to talk to somebody, Tim Alders, who is on the front lines working with the Trump campaign. This is very interesting what comes up next now. He has seen firsthand many of the irregularities that are going on from coast to coast right there. And what's being amassed now is a massive lawsuit. This is very important information. We're going to take that up next here. Stay right there, friends. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Let me read this quote to you here. If you were a Republican poll worker, you were treated like a dog, the president said. As his lawyer now, Jenna Ellis, she was holding up the phone to the microphone while this was happening. And he just put it out there, as Trump does. He says, our poll watchers were pushed out of the building. Don't be intimidated by these people. And he was referring to the threats and the pressure campaigns. And there's been a lot of stories of this, people. We'll talk about that. And also what happened on the ground. You know, we hear all these claims of fraud and what have you, but it's always good to speak to somebody who's been there, who has seen the fraud with their own eyes, rather than just hypotheticals out of the Journal or the Times or something else here. Let's talk next to Tim Alders, Mr. Constitution. But he's a former talk radio host and a very good one at that. He's an author. He's been working with the Trump attorneys directly, and he's been on the ground in the ground game and going door to door. And he's seen firsthand knowledge now of a lot of things that has taken place in various areas of the country. So, Tim, you know, you hear President Trump say, don't be intimidated by these people. Let's get into some real life stories now of what you've seen with your own eyes on the ground there. What's taken place?
Well, Malcolm, thank you so much, and thank you for doing this and continuing the fight. It is horrifying, is all I can say. And we've seen a lot. On the radio, we talked to a lot of people. We've had a lot of discussions throughout the years of things that trouble you. But when you see it with your own eyes and you knock on the doors and have people admit to massive fraud, it is scary. So I've been working with a group called the Mighty American Strike Force, and we went out prior to the election, knocking door to door, trying to gauge support in swing states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Las Vegas, Arizona. And the support for the president was massive, just massive. And we knew that we were going to win those states. And then after we didn't, and after I watched election night and I saw more voters voting than actually were registered in certain states, the Trump campaign jumped on it immediately and asked for team captains to lead teams of volunteers in these same swing states. So I would go to locations like Las Vegas with a team of 40 to 150 people. And there were other team captains there also. And we would go door to door. And the reason was, when we went out prior to the campaign, and I'm giving a little bit of background, we used a phone app that showed who the registered voters were in a household, whether they were Democrat, Independent, Constitution Party, Republican, soft Republican. We would identify it, would knock on the door, find out if they're planning to participate in the vote. And we noticed a lot of support for President Trump, even among Democrats. Well, this was really good because we gathered this information prior to the vote. And we also didn't see as much. It was amazing at the violence and the people who threatened us from the other side. And we didn't even announce who we were. You know, we're just with the election team. We're taking a survey. And they figured it wasn't the Democrats. So they figured you were with Trump and they would threaten your life on their door, some of them. So after the election and we saw that we're losing these swing states, we sent out people to verify. Now in Las Vegas, we identified over 40,000 votes from voters who were thrown out in the primary for one reason or another. And these were voters who hadn't participated in elections for over 12 cycles. So these people haven't voted forever. And now all of a sudden in this election, they voted again. So we had the address of the house. We had how many mail-in ballots came from the house. So we went door to door. it would knock on the door and it would be a person and would say, hey, we're here with the election survey team and we're looking to talk to the voters to find out how their voting experience was. That's all we said. We're with the election team and we wanted to see how your mail-in experience was. And more people said, I didn't vote by mail. I voted in person. I went down to the election site and voted in person. And we would ask the question, well, this voter are voting from this address. Well, those people haven't lived here for 20 years or 10 years or 5 years. I'm the only person who lives in this house. Well, then how did 5 mail-in ballots come from your house? And then we'd have the people document through a legal affidavit, and we would fill out a legal affidavit to turn into the attorneys. Now, some of the most horrific things that I saw is I had one of my team knock on a door, and a mother and her daughter answered the door. And the mother said, I am so proud of my daughter. She did everything the Democratic Party said. Her and her sorority went mailbox to mailbox of older people who haven't participated in the vote with the list that you guys give her. She thought we were the Democratic Party. And they took the ballots out of the mailboxes. And as a sorority, they filled out thousands in the name of Joe Biden and mailed them in with different signatures because different girls were signing it. Now, my team members filled out the affidavits and called me, and I reported to the Trump attorneys, and they said, would they get it on video? And I said, no, I'll go back. I'll try. So I went back, video cameras running, knocked on the door, and the grandfather opened the door, and I said, hi, I'm with the election team. And he goes, oh, you're my good friend. I felt a little bad because he was a little confused and thought he was a good friend. So he took me in the house, introduced me as a good friend. And I had the video running, and I said, hey, I'm with the election team, and I heard what your daughter did. And they said, no, it's our granddaughter. And I said, well, I heard what she and her sorority did. And they're like, yeah, they were getting ballots out of people's mailboxes and voting to help Biden get elected. You should be so proud and give this girl an award. And her sorority at UNLV. And the family was just proud and filled out affidavits that they did this.
So you have affidavits from them to this point.
Yeah. And video. Then we went to another house and we knocked on the door, and it was a Latin America gentleman, very nice, a very strong Trump supporter. And he was telling us that his daughter was a liberal who supported Biden. And we said, well, we're the election team. And, you know, we had this many ballots from this house. Is it just you and your daughter? And he's like, yeah. And we left, but he was nervous and we left. And if they asked us for our information, we gave it. So he called back the member who went there and he wanted to talk to the person in charge, which would have been me. So we went back and talked to him and he said, I'm really terrified. And I said, what are you terrified about? And his daughter was there and he goes, well, 2 days ago, my daughter was called by somebody in the Democratic Party and they took a group of people down to the Martin Luther King building downtown and were having people backdate ballots and fill out ballots that weren't utilized in Biden's name. And he goes, and I know that's illegal. And I figured you guys came to the door for the Trump campaign and you're trying to identify fraud. And I don't want my daughter to go to jail. So we documented that, turned it over to the Vegas attorneys. And the daughter had said that there were thousands of college age kids at this building filling out votes weeks after the election ended.
Tim, part of the debate has been, you know, can these states be turned back over, the widespread fraud versus these one-offs kind of thing? Now, what you're describing there sounds very organized. Somebody's organizing these things and has done that from a high level. You know, I started thinking about that just after the 3rd of November when it was fairly obvious what had taken place, and thinking, how can they possibly keep this a secret? Because, you know, when there's that many forces and people involved in such a scam like this and a widespread fraud deal, something has to come out. You know, you can't keep all of that sort of hidden when you have that many people involved in the process. Is that sort of what's happening here now? Because like you guys, I like what you've said, because I really like this, because you're out there kind of presenting yourselves as non-confrontational, like the election group, you know, kind of thing. Like, we're just, you know, following up here. It was very non-political, non-partisan, non-confrontational, just sort of gathering the information. So that was really brilliant to do it that way. Let's talk about the organization of this. How widespread are we talking, Tim? And how much of this is now going to come up to the surface?
Well, just so you understand, we had people doing this in multiple states, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Green Bay. And we had every week since the election, we've had over 100, 150 people from Texas, California, Oklahoma, Florida, people of all ages going out and volunteering their time to do this. And mind you, it's very scary because when you put your name on an official document that goes to the courts, they know the affidavit's you. The attorneys tell everybody to be very careful because even the attorneys for Trump are being threatened by the left. Their families are being threatened to be killed. Their businesses are being threatened to be destroyed. This is a very concerted effort that started high up. And I believe it started with COVID. I believe it started with they knew that they had no chance. So they wanted mail-in ballots so they can be fraudulent. And I'm not saying COVID doesn't exist. I'm not saying it doesn't. You know, my wife's a home health nurse and she deals with patients with COVID, but it's no different for her than dealing with people with the flu. Just like the flu, some people take it a lot worse and can die from it after causes of pneumonia. But very few really, really serious cases that she or doctors that we know have seen. So why is this so mainstream? Well, the mainstream media is on the side of the left. That's obvious anymore. Anybody who has one sense of intelligence knows that everybody has wanted to destroy this president for 4 years. It's been a concerted attack for 4 years.
Right. Yeah, no, it's perfect what you say there. This American Mighty Strike Force, how big is that group?
So just so people can understand, everybody felt Obama had the largest grassroots organization. He had 2.2 million people making calls or going door to door, and they reached 130 million. The Mighty American Strike Force utilized 2.6 million volunteers and reached over 220 million people by door.
Wow, that's incredible. You know, when you talked about it up front of the program, I just recalled Dr. Carol Swain is part of that group, as I recall. She's been out on the ground as well, doing kind of what you've been doing as well, I believe, now that you say that. Yeah.
Yeah, lots of people from all age groups.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, she felt that and passionate about it. And I know she was telling me that a lot, you know, when we were talking, and I didn't realize it was to the level of what you're speaking about. So I guess I didn't realize it was that big and that powerful, but we're talking a pretty powerful force then, Tim, this American Mighty Strike Force, much bigger than I thought.
After the 2016 election, Donald Trump, President Trump, came out and said if it wasn't for the Mighty American Strike Force, he would not have been elected.
Wow.
Because it has such a strong, and just so you understand, it's the group that's working in California, trying to flip California back Republican. Yeah. And they're having rallies in California that are having tens of thousands of people without large keynote speakers.
Yeah. Very impressive, Tim. Very, very impressive for sure. I just really dig the way you did this and the way that you presented these cases back to people in a very non-confrontational way, but just to get all these affidavits. So right now, how is it going? Let's get to the crux of the affidavits now. And how, talk about like, what's the momentum around the country? And in your, is this enough to make it happen? What's going to happen?
Well, it's going to have to go to the Supreme Court. Unfortunately, judges are as corrupt as media in this country. And when you're dealing with states like Las Vegas, where the courts are and the judges are severely democratic, they don't rule based on law. They rule based on personal opinion, and they hate President Trump. So the planning for all this came from President Trump. He's one of the most amazing and intelligent chess players I've ever met. Strategically, he just knows how to approach people. And as we are seeing all this thrown out of local courts, it's expected because the local courts are part of the local corruption. And this is why the Supreme Court was so important that it be done. And it be conservative so that actually follow the rule of law when this comes down to the rule of law. A lot of people are talking about how this election is not going to be certified, that they're not going to allow the Electoral College from these swing states turn in and submit their votes.
You're talking about on December 14th, on December 14th. Yeah.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
And who's they when you say they?
The courts, the Supreme Court. Okay. It's all going to come down to the Supreme Court or even district courts that are district Supreme Courts. They're not going to allow it to be certified because of questions of fraud.
Yeah, I think that's the crux of it right there, because I mentioned up top of the program as well, that is exactly what the president just came out and said here in the last couple of days, that, well, Joe Biden's going to have to prove that that fraud doesn't exist. And he came right out and said the Electoral College is not going to go along with this. You see the statements he's made.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And that's what everybody's hanging their hats on. So the mainstream media is trying to paint, well, look at what this judge did in Pennsylvania. Well, look at who that judge is and how poor his rulings have been for decades. Mm-hmm. And you look at this, and this whole thing is strategized to go to the Supreme Court of the United States. And it should. See, everybody's angry that President Trump's fighting this on the left. But I've seen it with my own eyes. I've seen the fraud. And once you've seen it, you can't take it back. For years as a radio host, we've suspected fraud. Does that make sense?
Yes.
We've talked about people. We've suspected fraud, but there's been no proof. President Trump, just like everything else he does, he's found the proof. Now, we as a team submitted thousands of affidavits. And the attorneys, of course, go through it and say, this one's good. This one's great. This one's good. This one's thrown out. This one's thrown out. So out of those thousands, they kept, 400 or 500. But if you can find 400 to 500 cases out of 5,000 that are kept, look at the percentage of that if you went to every door.
That's right. So you're convinced. What does your heart tell you at this point? Does this thing, first of all, it gets to the Supreme Court. What's your sense? What happens?
I think the Supreme Court's going to rule that there was fraud in this elections, because you can't deny it. If you have intelligence and you read these affidavits, you cannot say fraud has not happened. What one of the people high up in the Trump campaign told me is, listen, they might know that the fraud happened and they might not care. Talking about local judges, local courts.
That's right.
And that's the fear, is it might not fix this election. I feel in my heart of hearts, it has to fix this election.
Right. That is the ultimate question right there, Tim. That is exactly it. Listen, I want to have you invite you on this next week with me on The Voice of a Nation, so we have more time and talk about the American Mighty Strike Force. You might even want to bring someone with you. I don't know. But let's talk about this. I'm really impressed with what's happening here. There's a lot that's going to take place in the days ahead here. And we're anxious to see what happens, Tim. But I think certainly listeners should have a pretty good sense right now, Tim. And, I'll say this and end it with this, Tim. You sent me a message the other day, and I think you'll verify this is accurate. And you said that you'll never look at an election the same way again in this country.
You can't. Once you've seen it, you can't. You can't look at anything as fair anymore in America.
That's amazing. A big thank you to Tim Alders. We will be back with him and talk much more about this. He's got a lot of examples and stuff he was telling me about this. I was real interested in bringing him to you so you could hear directly what's transpired, because this is where the rubber meets the road right here, people. You could talk fairy tales all day long and talk about the headlines or what people are pushing, their brand of propaganda. But at the end of the day, let's talk about the evidence. Let's talk about the fraud. And then let's talk about the process and what we have to do for we the people to reclaim what has taken place here. It is a massive overhaul that has to happen with our election system in this country. I've said it repeatedly to you, and major things have to happen. And we need to get it the hell off the computer, the internet, because it will never be safe there, people. Never be safe. And you can sense that right now. Also, next hour, Michael Johns is with me. Continue on with all this election business. He's pretty lit here as well. So brace yourself for that here. A lot more happening back on the platform at America Out Loud. And as always, thank you for being with me on the mission. It's time to get involved and get loud.